Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
The show to the history.
Welcome to the Theater Podcast, intimate personal conversations with theater's biggest names. I'm your host, Alan Seals, and this is the first episode of May, which is kicking off our Quarren Queen Takeover series. Special thanks to Parody Bill, who made this month's episode graphics for us. This month will be all about Six, the musical, and this first episode is being kicked off with Broadway cast member Samantha Pauly, who's going to make her debut as Catherine Howard once Broadway returns. If you want to see the complete video version of this episode, I did record it. We used Skype, so you can see the whole thing on video. Head on over to ttp.fm/Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and the lowest tier will get you complete access to all of the video interviews, past, present, and future. Remember to follow me on social media at theater_podcast, on Facebook at /official theater podcast. Tell your friends, leave a rating, leave a review. Remember to please stay home if you can, wash your hands, be safe, stay healthy. And now everyone, please enjoy this episode with Samantha Pauly.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Listen up, let me tell you a story.
A story that you think you've heard before.
We know you know our names and our fame and our faces.
Know all about the glories and the disgraces.
My guest today is no stranger to the stage, performing regionally since 2010 in shows such as Honeymoon in Vegas, Elf the Musical, Seussical, and Godspell. She's played the title role of Eva Perone in Evita 3 times, which included making her West End debut last year in Regent's Park Open Air Theater. She was Valkyrie in the national tour of Bat Out of Hell and is now Catherine Howard in Six on Broadway. Samantha Pauly, welcome to the Theater Podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How are you holding up here in quarantine?
I'm pretty good. I'm really not that bad. I'm lucky that I live right next to my sister. She's just in the building right next to me. So if either of us goes anywhere, it's just to each other's apartments to hang out. And I have my dog here in the city with me too. So I don't feel too alone, which is nice, but you know, I have my days where I get really bored.
So are you're still in Manhattan in the area?
Yeah. I thought about going home to Chicago that's where my husband is and we have a house there. But I didn't leave right away because, you know, originally no one was really sure how long this was going to last. And they were like, April 13th, that's when we're planning on coming back. And so I was like, okay, I'll just hang out and wait. And that didn't happen. So,
like, you there,
just hanging out.
You were robbed of your Broadway debut.
I know. It was just, it was such a weird day too, because so many other things had already started to get canceled, but like no one told us anything, and we were all kind of hoping that, like, surely everything, you know, will go dark tomorrow, we'll at least open tonight. and have the party, and then that's fine. Like, if we have to take a month off, that's cool. Just let us open and let us have the party. And I don't think none of us really heard anything until maybe like 3:30, almost 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, it was March 12th. And I was like sixth or seventh row center, March 11th, your final preview.
Oh, great.
So I was there and I was like, this is going to be great. They're going to open. They're going to get they'll be in Tony contention. It's going to be awesome. And then the next morning, yeah, Moulin Rouge was like, both shows are canceled today. And I said, ooh, somebody's got it. Like, there's no way they would close early unless, you know, the producers knew somebody had it or yeah. whatnot. And then all of a sudden, you know, it just came out that afternoon and immediately I thought of you and the cast. Like, just, oh, I felt so sad.
Yeah.
because there are so many of you who are making Broadway debuts,
yeah.
and the show has had so much of a build up and it's been going everywhere and it's so popular and so many people are anticipating this, and then it was just like, nope, sorry, we have no idea.
Yeah. I think one thing that helped a little is that, I mean, obviously we'd have been in previews for about a month. So I feel like I already made my Broadway debut. Like, we did the thing. I had like our first preview. I was very emotional and cried. But then, you know, during previews, we're in rehearsals almost every day still working and then doing the show at night. So I was disappointed. I was sad. You know, I was excited to officially open because, like you said, there's been a lot of anticipation for six. But I guess I also consider this somewhat of a not a blessing, but something that was meant to happen maybe for us, because a lot of us had been sick or had, you know, vocal fatigue and just needed some time, because mm-hmm. we've also been doing this show for almost a year. And our time off from it has been very limited. I think the most amount of time we've had off, I mean, I went away to London and had like months away from the show, but I was still doing another show.
Which was not easy either.
Which was not easy. But, you know, I think the most amount of time we had off from the show was maybe 2.5-3 weeks. Because we had some time, but then we had to come to New York and do press in October. And so I think a lot of us are using this time to rest and take care of ourselves the way that we've probably needed to for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And which, I mean, it's kind of a blessing in disguise in that respect. You know, the voices are going to come back stronger and there's going to be a certain amount of conditioning, you know, like cardiovascularly for your show and shows like Moulin Rouge, the dancers. I mean, like, come on, that's something you can't just go back into. But you said something too, that you're still in rehearsals while you're in previews, but this show, like, Six has been around for years and multiple incarnations already.
Yeah.
What's changing? What's being worked on?
Nothing in terms of like songs or, you know, choreography really changed that much. There are a couple things that changed, like snippets of lines, or there was some music that got rewritten to just like amp it up for Broadway, if that makes mm-hmm. sense. And there were a couple things with the choreography that had changed that we may have like originally been taught incorrectly, that then the choreographer from London was with us now for all of these rehearsals. We only had her in Chicago when we first started for a week. And then she had to leave. She was doing Hamilton in the UK.
Oh, that old thing.
So,
that old chestnut.
Hamilton, you know. But we had a lot of time with her, so she was able to get like really picky and really specific with how she wanted things to look. But Lucy and Toby were also using that time, I think, to just like play around with stuff and you know, the show is good as it is. And Lucy has told us this many times, like the show could work like in a basement with no audience. Like the show is fine and it's good. And we could open, you know, tomorrow and be okay, but we have the time. So they wanted to use the time to like, maybe we'll try this joke this way, or maybe we'll try seeing it this way. Like we have the time, so let's experiment and see what works and what doesn't. Which is what previews are for. So nothing changed like drastically. But they had the time, so they were using it to get really particular and really specific. And I mean, you saw the show. There are so many lights. There is so much tech wise that, they were doing a lot of stuff with that too. They added a couple extra things with lights that sometimes would work and sometimes wouldn't. So they were doing a lot of changes.
Which is, yeah, it's beautiful. It's a rock concert about history on Broadway.
Yep.
Like it's such a unique kind of thing. We definitely want to come back to Six, but normally on the podcast where I start is kind of like your beginnings about you and you know who you are. So you said you grew up in Chicago, right? Or Chicago's home. Is that where you grew up?
Chicago has been home for me for the last 5 years. I am originally from Iowa. That's where my parents are still. But I moved to Chicago after college because I wasn't really into just the New York audition scene in general. I had been out here a couple times, like as a non-equity actor trying to pound the pavement and, you know, wake up at 4 a.m. and go wait in line only to probably not get seen. And that's just not, that wasn't ever something that I was interested in doing. And while I was still in college is when I met my now husband, and Chicago was kind of our compromise. He went to college at Illinois Wesleyan and he went to law school at Notre Dame. So he knew a lot of people still in the Chicago area. And I just kind of did my research about what the best theaters were to work at and open calls and this and this and that. So we decided on Chicago. I think we had been there for like 2 months and I booked my first job. I didn't have any equity points. I had never worked in an equity house before. I booked Godspell at the Marriott Theater and they just offered me my equity card, to do the show, which I was kind of reluctant about, but was a good decision in the end. And I've been fortunate since then to be working pretty regularly, in Chicago, which was another reason that I didn't really feel like I needed to move out to New York, because I, about a year after being in Chicago, I got an agent, I signed with an agency, and they were sending me out to New York enough for things, or I was getting called out here for enough stuff that I was like, well, if I can work regularly in Chicago and, you know, book an $80 flight to go to New York for 48 hours and then come back, I'll do that. I'll continue to do that. So we've been there ever since. And then I finally did book something and it brought me out here.
Well, when like the singing and the acting, where did the love for theater come in? Have you, like as a kid, were you always singing and performing?
Not really. I know, you know, there's a lot of people that are like, I've just been doing this since I was 3 years old. I think my love for singing just came from watching Disney movies. I wanted to be Jasmine and I wanted to be Ariel. I didn't see my first Broadway show, I think, until my junior year of high school. But that's also when I did my first show. The end of my junior year, they had auditions for like the Pajama Game. Didn't know the show, didn't know what it was. I sang in choir and I did choir in like junior high and, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, end of my junior year, auditioned for the musical. I thought it was fun. The choir took a trip to New York and we saw Drowsy Chaperone and Wicked. And me being really dumb, I didn't know what Wicked was, I didn't know what any of it was. and we saw Wicked and intermission happened. And I thought that was the end of the show. I'm not kidding you. And I was like, cool. So now what? Like, where are we? I was like putting my coat on to leave. But seeing that and doing, you know, the show and having fun, I was like, this seems pretty cool. Like, this seems like something that I could do. I think that maybe I could go to college for this and I could try it out. And I think because of that, because I got started so late, my parents were very like, well, but what if it doesn't work? Like, what's your backup plan? You know, the people
right.
that say stuff like that. And I just kept saying, I don't know. Cause I'm not very good at like math or science. Like, I honestly didn't know what else I could do.
That's actually what I was going to say was junior year is late to all of a sudden decide, yep. Oh, I want to go to college for this.
Yep. I wasn't aware of like, what's the best college to go to for music theater? But I had a really great drama teacher in high school that I think he was kind of flocking me like, she auditioned for the musical. She seems really good at this. Okay. She seems to really like it. Now she seems really interested in like going to college for this, but he knew that I wasn't aware of how to even apply for college. How do I audition for a school?
There's circles you have to be part of to know this stuff. Wow. Yeah.
I didn't know what, you know, what the top places were. But you know, there's like International Thespian Festival, and I think every state has their own thespian festival, maybe. But my school went to Iowa Thespian Festival, and he just like was taking me around to like a couple different colleges that were there. He's like, I've heard about this one, or I know so and so from this school, I know this person from this school, so I'll introduce you. And while we were there, I auditioned, they were doing like a scholarship thing, scholarship auditions while they were there. And I was like, yeah, but I'll audition. And he like helped me pick stuff out, but he was like, you don't really know. You're not super experienced. I know you're really new at this. So don't get your hopes up, but we'll pick out your stuff and whatever. So we had to do like a song and a monologue. And I remember sitting in the hallway of like this high school that we were at, where Thespian Festival was at, and seeing everybody was dressed up in like audition clothes. Like all the girls were in their jewel tone dresses, and the guys were in like nice pants and a shirt. And I was in like more like dance type clothes. I was in all black, mm-hmm. and I had on like yoga pants and like just a top. And I remember sitting there and I called my mom and I was like, Mom, everybody else is like super dressed up. Everybody else is very dressed up. And now I feel like I'm going to look really dumb. Oh, there's my dog. Like, I feel like I'm going to look really stupid. I don't know what to do. And she was like, it's going to be fine. Just do the thing. Like, nobody told you you had to dress up. And I was like, okay, you're right. Went in, did my stuff. And then that night, like the final night of Thespian Festival, like announced the winner. And I remember sitting there and they were like, it's Samantha Pauly from troop whatever number. And I remember being like, no, that's no way. And my drama teacher, he was crying. He was like, I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah. So like, it might have been that moment that my parents were like, oh, okay. So like,
So you just rolled up and won this thing with like, no voice lessons, no formal training.
Yeah.
Just wow. So, I mean, have you taken voice lessons since then? Yeah. You went to college for this.
Yeah, voice lessons. I have a voice teacher in Chicago who is actually the music director for Six here. But yeah, I still consider myself like not a good music theater actor because there's still a lot of shows that I don't know. There's a lot of shows that I've never listened to the cast recording. A lot of shows that I should probably know, like, what they're about, and I just don't. I don't keep up with, like, what's new and, like, what's happening right now. When Six came along, I was like, I don't know what that is. I didn't listen to any of the music from it until the night before my callback. But I did. I just kind of roll with the punches. I just kind of roll up, like you said.
Well, I know a lot of people like that. That they're just like, wherever the opportunity leads me, whatever door opens, I'm just going to walk through it. And there's so many people who have told me that they just got where they've gotten because they just keep saying yes.
Yeah.
And it just leads to the next thing. And you know, depending on like the spiritual background of whoever it is that I'm talking to, they're like, oh, you know, sometimes it's fate. Sometimes it's one reason or another. But, you know, it's what's supposed to be is supposed to be, you know, whether or not you buy into that or not. But so speaking of callbacks, on January 14th, 2019, you posted a picture on Instagram, said that never before did you have to perform a Diamond Single Ladies mashup for a callback. Did you get called in for Moulin Rouge?
Yeah. They were still looking for standby for Sateen. So I flew to New York for that. that callback was also really fun because when I was in college with a couple of my friends, we taught ourselves all of the Single Ladies choreography. And so I still know all of it. So I, for some reason, I was getting ready to go in and feeling good about singing all the stuff. And I was like, I don't really know what to do though for this Single Ladies part. Like, I don't want to just stand there, but I also haven't, you know, the show wasn't open on Broadway yet. So there was nothing I could refer to. So I was like, maybe I'll just throw in a little bit of it. And I think that's probably where I went wrong. And that's why I didn't book it. I was doing the full dance thing, but I was like, I was giving them some sass for sure. And they were like, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, again, if you had taken that, you wouldn't be where you are now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
I, like you said, I am definitely a everything happens for a reason type person. Within the last like year and a half, I have definitely, that is,
well, yeah, something I love. It seems like the last year and a half has been like just full of ups and downs for you in general.
Yes,
and what is it? 2018, the Bat Out of Hell tour. You were Valkyrie,
mm-hmm.
And what the hell happened? For those who don't know, like it was the tour was canceled like days before New York was supposed to start, right?
No, it was
It was canceled before the tour was supposed to start.
Yeah, we rehearsed in New York, and this was like a year long. Full production contract tour.
Yeah.
The top tier. I was ready. Full year, first national tour. I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going to get my foot in the door. I'm going to do a tour. And then that is it. Things are going to go up from there. Can't wait. And we rehearsed for 5 weeks in New York. We started in Toronto. We were in Toronto for like, three, four weeks. We teched the show. We opened there. We were sold out almost every single night. And 3 days, I think, before we were supposed to come back to the U.S. and open in Detroit, we had understudy rehearsal that day. We went on a dinner break, and we got a big text message from our stage manager saying, hey, we're going to have a company meeting at 7 o'clock in the house. The show that night was at 8 o'clock. And everyone was speculating like, oh my God, what is this? What is this about? What's going on? And in my mind, I was like, oh, it's probably just a meeting because we have to go back to the US and it's a meeting like we had before we left. Like, make sure you have this, make sure you have your passport. Don't bring any weed gummies back, you know, like, you know, whatever.
Which I guess is a real concern now.
Yeah. And, you know, walking from my dressing room to go up to the theater for this meeting, I could sense from a couple other people within the cast, like, something was wrong. And there were, looking back now, there were a lot of red flags that I had never been on tour, so I wasn't aware. But we went upstairs to the theater, and everybody was there except for our director and any of the producers. None of them were there. Our main producer sent an email to our company manager and said, I need you to read this to the cast. And she had asked if she could wait until after the show. And they said, no, you have to tell them before the show. I think because they had already canceled all of the trucks that they were going to load the set onto, and they didn't want that information getting out before or during the show. So they brought us all in. Our company manager had a piece of paper in her hand, and she was like, I'm really sorry that I have to do this. And a couple other people had figured it out already and were like yelling and, you know, like yelling obscenities and whatever. And I'm just sitting there, and she read this note that said, you were going to close after Toronto. Continuing the tour just isn't in the cards right now. We're hoping to pick back up again in the summer of 2019. That was it. They didn't tell us why. They didn't tell us what they were going to do for us, if they were going to pay us any money, you know, what was going on. And I just started laughing because I could not believe it. I was like laughing, and that turned into ugly crying. And our company manager was like, so, you know, we'll send you guys home on Sunday or Monday, whatever you guys prefer. And collectively, everybody was kind of like, what home? Where are you going to send us? Because most people lived in New York and they had sublet their apartments for a year. So everybody was like, what home? Where am I supposed to go? What am I supposed to tell my family?
Wow.
Someone in the cast had booked King Kong, but said no because this tour was more money and he was trying to make money so that he could send his daughter to college.
Oh, no.
So we never ended up finding out why. They paid us for the rest of that week and the week following. And it ended up turning into a big, kind of a legal thing with Actors Equity, because the producers had done it just in time and given us technically enough notice so that they didn't have to pay us any money beyond the following week.
So nothing for the tour or anything.
Nothing for the tour. And so it turned into this big thing with us and Actors Equity saying, like, cool. So technically within the rules, producers or, you know, companies can give a week's notice for a year long tour, and then they owe us nothing. Like, we have turned down other jobs. We have given up our place to live. We have, you know, put our full trust into these people, but that's the only protection that we have. And so a kind of a cool thing was that, you know, then it turned into this big discussion with Actors Equity about them looking closer into, oh, okay, so how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? How do we make sure that we are providing more protection for our actors? So that happened towards the end of 2018. I came back home like the beginning of November, and there were two other shows back in Chicago that I had said no to that then I, you know, went to because I was home to see my friends, but I just had to sit there being like, cool. Auditions for everything in the spring had already happened. I missed all of that. It's kind of sent me into like, I was really depressed. I knew I was going to have to like go back to working part-time at SoulCycle, which I was doing before that. And it was bad enough for a while that like my husband reached out to a couple of my friends to be like, I've never seen her like this before and I don't know what to do. I don't know how to help her anymore. So I need anyone to tell me what to do, to tell me how to help her, to make her feel better. There's nothing I'm doing is working. And I think I had kind of decided at that point that I was like, you know what? I need to take a break for a while because I put, you know, all of my trust in what I thought was a sure thing. And theater's never a sure thing, but to me, and I think most actors, you know, a full production contract on a year-long tour is like, we're good to go.
With no expenses at home or wherever that is. Yeah. Yeah. That's good.
And I was one of the lucky people. We had already bought a house back in Chicago. So I had a home to go back to, but there were plenty of my friends within the cast that went to go back home and move in with their parents or one of my girlfriends from the show. I think in a matter of 3 months hopped around to 4 different sublets. So I was done. I talked to my sister and I was like, I don't want to do this for a while. Theater isn't making me happy anymore. I'm not excited about new projects. I don't want to go to auditions. I feel like people are having me come audition for things because they feel bad. And I don't want that. I'm not into that.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
So I stopped auditioning for stuff for a little bit, for a couple months. And then 6 auditions started happening, and Chicago Shakes asked me to come in, and I said no 3 times. And there, the Marriott Theater where I got my first job in Chicago, had asked me to be a part of their production of Footloose. And, I didn't audition, nothing. They were like, hey, we want you to play Rusty. Come do this. And that one, I was like, okay, I love working at the Marriott Theater. That I've done like 10 shows there, that they are like home.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I can do that. I know they're going to pay me well. I'll do that for 2.5 months. Great. And I kept saying no to 6 because I already had this other job. I was like, no, I can't do that to them. I can't drop out of the show. And it just kept coming back. They just kept asking me to come back and audition for it. And then finally one night while I was at work at the Marriott, the music director, Roberta, called me and she had left me a voicemail, and I still have that voicemail on my phone. I will not delete it. I'll never delete it. But she called me and left me a voicemail saying, like, we've had the first couple days of auditions. We're not seeing what we want. I think you should at least make a tape because then you can be on their radar. Even if you don't do the show, if the show goes somewhere else or if anything happens with the show later.
Right.
But she was like, I totally get it. There are so many times, she's like, in my past that I have said yes to one show because I feel like I owe it to them, or I owe them my loyalty, and I've missed out on other things. And she's like, this is a business. That's all it's about. So you can at least make a tape. There's nothing wrong with that. So I went home that night and made a tape at 10:30 at night. And I sent it to her right away, and the casting director at Chicago Shakes. And she was like, they love it. They want you to come in. Final callbacks. And I was like, all right, cool. But then I had to call my agent and be like, okay, listen, because he knew I was doing all this too. And I was like, should I go? Because there's going to be other people there from Chicago that I know that also know that I'm supposed to be doing this other show. And I don't want any of this getting back to people that Marriott and, you know, me getting in trouble or whatever. And he was like, I say we just go, because even if you go, it doesn't mean that you're going to take the job. This is something separate. You should go. So then while all of that was happening, I got an email from Tara Rubin casting saying, mm-hmm. Hey, there's a production of Evita that's happening in London over the summer. It's really different. It's supposed to be like Beyonce at Coachella. And I was like, well, I've never been to London. That's a lot of money they would pay me. Cool. I'll do that. I'll audition for that. I love Evita. So we had final callbacks for six, which was like an 8-hour day in Chicago. And then that night, I got on a plane and flew here to New York to do my first audition and taping for Evita. So all of it started happening at like around the same time.
And so you never took the job in Chicago then, it sounds like.
Well, I that happened so quickly that like I said yes to Footloose, and they were like, cool, sending you a contract tomorrow. And I had signed a contract already for this other show. Footloose wouldn't have conflicted with Evita, so that's why I was like, I could do that. And then the day after I got back from New York, my agent called me about six, and he was like, they want you to play Catherine Howard. And I was like, okay, so what do we do? And he was like, well, do you want to do it? And I said, yeah, I want to do it.
Did you know anything about the show? Like, what made you want to do it?
I didn't know anything about it. I knew that it was coming to Chicago. I had had actually a couple friends in London reach out to me, and people in Chicago that knew about it or had listened to it on Spotify that were like, Six is coming to Chicago. You have to audition. And I was like, okay, I don't know what it's about. And like I said before, I'm just really bad at doing my research and knowing. So I still didn't know until they had me come in. And then when I first went in for callbacks, I was called back for three of the queens. So I was just looking at who everybody was and what the show was about. I knew then finally, you know, what it was, but I guess I still didn't realize like how big of a deal it was, or how much people loved it already. Especially people here in the US, like there was already such a following.
Yeah. That's the trend now, you know, look at Percy Jackson musical and Be More Chill and Six, you know, it's basically the music, Spotify, that's demanded come to Broadway.
Yeah.
Or even to off, you know, you said, I want to go back to something. You glossed over it. I don't even know if you realized you said it a while back. Is when you're talking about Bat Out of Hell that you were sad. You said you're actually depressed because, you know, your trust was broken. You put all your trust into these producers, and I wonder if, you know, delving into the psychological aspects of of you. And this is the first time I've met you, you know, virtually here while we're in mutual quarantine. You know, I was looking through Instagram And well, you're pretty open on Instagram and your posts and whatnot. And you were saying, you said that, you know, on December 31st, 2019, you had this wonderful post that you're like, 2019 had some major moments, none that you could have ever expected. Mm-hmm. And you said the end of 2018 almost broke you. And, you know, you talked about Vita, but, you know, battling depression, anxiety yourself, but when you said trust, and it harkened back to this post because you also mentioned an abusive relationship that came from college, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I wonder, like, for you, do you think, I mean, so going into, or coming out of being a survivor of an abusive relationship, you know, there's a broken trust there with relationships in general.
Yeah. I think that I've definitely since then, because that relationship ended in like 2010. And definitely since then I have realized that the problem within that relationship was not me. It was something with him and insecurities that he had that he took out on me. And I think since then my mentality has definitely changed where I'm aware of people like that, if that makes sense. Like I'm willing to trust people like my husband or people that I work with because I can see that they're inherently good and I know that they are not like this guy, because I can recognize in other people when I see those characteristics that he had, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
I, especially in terms of like, because, you know, within a relationship like that, I think the trust comes in other forms. Whereas like, if I'm trusting the people that I work with or, you know, producers or directors or whoever, that I think, at least for me, is a different kind of trust. Like, I know that you're going to take care of my paycheck and you're going to make sure that the stage is safe and this and this and that, and that we're supposed to be doing on this day and we're ending rehearsal at this time. Like, that to me is, I've been able to like mentally, that is different. Whereas I guess with this guy in college, that was just like, he was just, I don't know. I think it was just an insecurity within himself. I don't know. Like I said, that he would get so mad. If I booked something and he didn't, or we went to auditions together and I got more callbacks for something than he did. And it took me a while to figure out in that relationship that like, oh, he's got a problem with himself that he's taking out on me. And I think, in terms of work trust, that's something totally different.
Yeah. I mean, I guess where I was going with this was I'm speculating that it may be hard for you to make close relationships with new people now. And the people, once you do let that wall down, it's, you know, it's like you're very loyal, right? And
yeah.
And okay. with them forever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you're trusting for these producers this time in your life, you're like, okay, a year, I'm putting my eggs in this basket now, and I'm going to not have a place in New York. And if I was, you know, let your other actors sublet and didn't have places to go back to, because they were trusting that the next steps would be taken care of.
Yeah.
And so that now, as to why at the end of the year, you said 2018 almost broke you, theater wasn't making you happy, theater, you know, you wanted to take a break because you basically got like used and thrown away.
Yeah.
In this tour scenario that never happened.
Yes. Yeah. I totally get what you're saying. And I guess that does definitely harken back to that, because, you know, if anything, I've, I love theater, and it's for, you know, a lot of people, I think most people, it's an escape from real life, whether you're watching a show or you're on stage and you're a part of it. But yeah, then yeah, to have all of that end, I was like, okay, then like, what am I doing? Why, if I can't feel safe here, where am I supposed to, am I never supposed to leave my house? Like, where am I, what am I supposed to do?
Well, so now that like the rug was pulled out from under all of you for in this pandemic, like, are you okay? Is it kind of like memories of before? Is it different now?
I guess a little bit. This seems to be different in that, like, I know that Six already had a lot of anticipation. People were very excited for it to come to Broadway. And I know that, you know, anything can happen, and nothing is guaranteed, obviously, in theater. I definitely know that now. But I think that I have faith in the show itself, and I have faith in what we've created, and I have faith in the ticket sales that we've had for a while, that I know that we will come back. The only thing that makes me nervous or gives me anxiety is that it's not like Broadway that's uncertain. It's all of this coronavirus stuff that is uncertain, and there's no definitive end.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the anxiety for me with all of this now just comes from, but I was so excited. And I think it's more of like a, I finally made it. I made it to Broadway. Yes. And like getting excited for like the Tonys and this and this and that, like awards season. And now I'm like, what the God? of course. But I think I have also learned since 2018 that, like I said, everything happens for a reason. And I am a firm believer that you are always exactly where you are meant to be in this moment. And if I am not proof of that in the theater world, I don't know what is. Like, if Bad Out of Hell hadn't been canceled, then I wouldn't have had time to audition for Six, and all of this other stuff wouldn't have happened. So that all, you usually can't see it while it's happening, but everything definitely happens for a reason.
Absolutely. You're doing, on your Instagram page, you're also doing, a song a day, right?
Yeah.
So was that something to keep yourself, just to keep yourself busy or keep yourself singing?
I mean, I think both. Now, after the first week, I figured out that, like, okay, if I wake up at this time and I like wake up and I work out and I eat breakfast, then I can usually start filming my song around this time, and I can edit it and then post it try and post right at 4 o'clock every day. So that has definitely kept me sane, because it's made me feel like I have a schedule. And then stuff getting added in, like this podcast, or, you know, whatever kind of phone interview and stuff like that, or like a Zoom class, that's just like an added bonus where I feel like I'm doing something with my day. So it was part of that I was like, I'm going to have to do something. Otherwise I'm going to go nuts. So it's part that, but it's also part, like, it's making me be better about being active on social media and engaging with fans that I have, I guess, which is...
Why do you put that in air quotes? You have fans. You have fans.
It's just a weird thing for me to say, because I just think I'm like a dumb little potato from Iowa that, like, you know, like, why do I have fans? God, it's so weird. So it's made me better about that too, because I've never been particularly good at like posting on Instagram or using these hashtags or whatever. So it's been good for me to do that too, and just like get more involved. But it's also fun. Now I'm like, picking songs and like putting on outfits and making it funny. And it,
well, you're explaining, you're talking to the fans, you're getting feedback, you're being authentic, which I think, especially for people in this industry, you know, you're on stage because you're finding a way to express yourself. You're mm-hmm. finding a way to deal with whatever's going inside your head anyway by embodying these other characters. And it's giving you this way to still perform. You're still performing every day.
It's I've been singing, you know, the same thing for like a year. So it's fun to get song suggestions from people and sing something that maybe I haven't sung in a while, or I've had to learn a lot of new stuff because, like I said, I'm not good at keeping up with new stuff on Broadway. And so I get a lot of requests for like stuff from Mean Girls or Beetlejuice. And I saw Mean Girls last year, but it's not like a cast recording I listened to. So, that's just another thing that it's an activity for me to sit and try and learn a song without having the sheet music by just like listening to it on YouTube and looking at the lyrics, you know? So it's,
well, Spring Awakening, you need to know. Spring Awakening is good.
I do.
But I enjoyed the like, okay, I guess I'm just in pajamas because that's what people do. But yeah.
And like, and now it's, you know, I feel like a lot of times for theater performers, there's an expectation of looking how you do on stage or like being that person or being perfect. And I am more than willing to put videos on my Instagram of me like forgetting the words or making a mistake or my voice cracking, because like that's just what it is. For a while I was taping these and I was like, oh, that sounded like garbage. I need to do it again. And finally over the last 2 weeks, I've just been like, whatever, I'll just do one take. And if it's good, it's good. And we're going to use it. And if it's not, then we'll make it funny. and now I'm just like dressing up and making it ridiculous.
Well, I think it's fun. And it gives the rest of us who can't go see shows and who like, we crave this content.
Yay,
so to still be able to connect with the people that we'd rather see on stage, you know, this is like the next best thing because we can't leave our houses right now. Yeah. And there is no Broadway.
Yeah.
So, well, there is Broadway. It's just, it's absolutely changed, of course.
Yeah.
But Six being like very women empowerment, it's mm-hmm. all the band is female. Is it a different... Is it a different vibe for you, a different dynamic or a different energy on stage? Because the whole show is about women's empowerment anyway.
Yeah. I guess it is a different vibe on stage. But only in the sense that like now that the six of us have been together for a solid year, that we are all best friends. And I say that very genuinely. There isn't anyone that doesn't get along. We all love each other so much and we always support each other. And a lot of people that come to see the show say that they can see that on stage. So I guess it does feel different in that sense because we've also been encouraged to be ourselves and bring ourselves to the character so that we can create something very unique. But there are so many times that we are just ourselves on stage with each other, like trying to make each other laugh or, you know, giving each other a look or dancing and being silly. So it definitely does feel different to other shows because we've been given that freedom and because there are so many times that, and I know it will happen when we all come back, that we'll look around at each other, like while someone's singing their solo or while we're all sitting together, that I'm just like, we are all just really good friends, aren't we? Like, it does feel different compared to other things I've done where, you know, the show might not have as much freedom in terms of connecting with each other, or, you know,
right,
having fun. And it is, it's very cool to be all women up there. That is just nuts. It's really cool.
So you had like 4 weeks of possible stage door feedback so far. Is there anything that like sticks out from your mind from the New York stage door?
I think the only thing that like really sticks out is like the security that we have that's out there with us, which just cracks me up because, a couple nights a week there will be, the same like two or three guys that come that have like stacks of programs or posters that, they go and then sell on eBay.
Yeah. Yeah.
And security guys know who they are. So they'll come out and they'll announce everybody like, oh, the girls are doing selfies tonight, or they're not doing selfies, or make sure you have your cameras ready and whatever. And they're these huge guys. Like, they are scary.
And security.
Security. And it's always the thing that always sticks out that I find hilarious is when, like, they'll be talking to, like, the little fangirls, and they'll be like, okay, sweetie, you have to get this and this and this out. And then they'll see one of the guys, like, standing in the back, and they'll just start cursing them and be like, hey, like, yelling at these guys. Like, their demeanor just changes. And it's so funny to me because I'll stand there and I'll be like, oh my God, geez. But I think that's the only thing that's different. Like, we've had at other theaters that we were at, you know, earlier in the year, I don't think any of them were ready for a stage door type thing. I don't think they anticipated that the fan base would be so large. So like when we got to Canada, we had like a meeting on the first day in the theater. And I was like, so what's the stage door protocol? And they were like, the what? And I was like, you're going to have to do something. You're going to have to like rope off an area or make a line. But it's been pretty chill. And let, you know, I mean, for all I know, there could have been things that happened that I just wasn't aware of, but you know what though? Sometimes people are very intense. Like, fans will yell at each other, like, don't push me, or like, I'm trying to get through. And sometimes people can get a little, crazy, but
people come sometimes from miles and miles and miles away to see their favorite person in their favorite show to get the signature. And if they don't get that selfie or that signature or whatever it is, then like, life over.
Yeah. And sometimes it's more like the moms of some of these kids. Like, couldn't really care less. Like, if we say we're not doing selfies, because sometimes if we do a selfie with everyone that wants one, we could be out there for an hour and a half. It could take a long time. So sometimes we'll just say, like, as we're walking, you guys feel free to snap photos, but we're not going to stop for individual people. And sometimes it's more the moms that are kind of out of control, that get a little intense, and the kids are like, whatever, that's fine. And the moms are like, no, get in there for a picture. But otherwise it really hasn't been that bad.
Stage parents, man. I'm happy I didn't have any. Doesn't sound like you had any stage parents. So
no, not at all. My parents. Yeah, whatever. They're always more excited to see like the other people that I'm in shows with instead of me. They'll be like, where's so and so? I want to see that person from the show. Where's the guy that played Che and Evita? Where's Trent? Where's he? And I'm like, what about me? I just did the show. And they're like, yeah.
I'm just as cool, mom and dad. Come on. All right. Well, let's wrap this up here. And I have three standard closing questions that I ask everybody on the podcast. The first one is, what motivates you?
As cliche as it sounds, the fans and my husband. He's good at keeping me on days when I'm like, ugh, I just don't want it. He's like, but look at what you get to do. Go do it. I'm like, okay, you're right.
I love that. Okay. So the second question is, what advice would you give to your younger self and younger people listening now starting out down a similar path?
Be patient. You have to be patient. And like I said before, you are always exactly where you are meant to be, even if you can't see it in this moment. You have to trust that.
All right, so last question, hardest one. If you could only see one show for the rest of your life, but you can see it as many times as you want, what would you see?
I would see Andrew Lipa's The Wild Party.
Ooh, that's a new one.
I feel like in the last week, I've gotten questions from like newspapers or other people that are like, what is one show that you've never done that you want to do? What is one Broadway cast recording that you would recommend people listen to? And that's been my answer for everything. I just love it. It's underrated.
Yeah, it's very, very good. So we can find you online on Instagram at Sam Pauly, P-A-U-L-Y, and your SamanthaPauly.com. Mm-hmm. And that's it, right? You don't do Twitter?
I don't have a Twitter. Makes me nervous.
Yeah. Yeah, it's dirty. Twitter is like the back alley of the internet.
Yeah, Twitter's like, kind of scary.
We can get more of me at thetheaterpodcast.com. Show your support at theaterpodcast.com/Patreon. You can find me on Instagram and back alley Twitter at theater_podcast. Please leave a rating, leave a review. This is edited by Matthew Hendershot. And Sam, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take a deep breath, make the world a little colorful.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.